Today I want to talk about sacred spaces. And virtually all cultures have this concept of spaces that are sacred. So it might be churches, or a temple, or a mosque, or sacred sites. And what they have in common is that they're all spaces where we step away from everyday concerns and just getting on with all the different things we have to do, the work we have to do, and our long to-do list, and step into another space. And so one way we could think about it is that we step out of just being a human doing into a human being. So it's a space for being present in a different way. And we usually enter this space quite intentionally, and there's protocols around how we enter that space. So there might be a dress code. So for instance, for church, you'd be wearing your Sunday best. In our group, we wear black clothing, things like that. There's ritual behaviors, that's rules about what you can do and what you can't do. And also, if someone breaks those rules, that can sometimes cause a lot of distress. So if someone then comes into that space and uses it in a way that wasn't intended, then it can lead to conflict or even worse. So sometimes people take the idea of that sacred space very seriously. And when I talk about sacred space, I know that the word sacred is a little bit loaded. And so I don't mean it to be, sort of necessarily particularly religious or sort of have that sense of ordinary life is ordinary and sacred is somehow special, but I couldn't think of another word, so I'll keep using that idea of the sacred space. But it's basically a space where we engage with life differently. And so, for instance, hospitals also have sacred space, and it's quite interesting in such a highly medical setting that most hospitals around the world, I think, do have something approaching a sacred space. So it could be a chapel, but of course in our multicultural society, it's just called sacred space. And so it could be used for Friday prayers for Muslims, it could be used for meditation groups, church services, or for people just to sit and just get away from all that medical interaction and being a patient or being a visitor or being a healthcare worker, and again, entering a space that's a little bit different. So we're called Ordinary Mind Zen, and it's based on the koan, the famous koan that Chao Chu asks Nanchuan, what is the way? And Nanchuan answered, ordinary mind is the way. So it's a very ordinary, everyday experience that is the way in our tradition. But even in our tradition, we do have that sense of a dojo or a sacred space. And we don't have a temple in our group. We are a very small group. So we hire rooms and in a yoga center, or we've used the library. We've even met for a while in a tango studio, which was also a tiki bar. And so what we do when we enter those spaces, we set up a little altar, which is very simple, maybe a Buddha or could even be a flower. We set out the cushions and then we light a candle and incense. And once that candle is lit, that means that space is now a dojo. And so when we enter the dojo, we bow, we walk a certain way, we behave in a certain way. And then once the candle is extinguished, then it becomes an ordinary room again. And so one of the jobs of the sutra leaders and the timekeepers is kind of to maintain that space. So to set it up, to make sure it's set up properly, that people know what's expected, and that if someone's sort of acting in a way that's, you know, not quite how they should, then they might talk to them, things like that. And one of the challenges, of course, we've had in the pandemic is recreating something like a sacred space on Zoom. Because now we are at home, we may have pets or children. We don't necessarily have a dedicated meditation room, so it's hard to recreate that sense of a sacred space, entering into that even on Zoom. And I think if we'd known at the beginning how long this would go on for, we might have spent a bit more time thinking about how to best convey that experience on Zoom. But yeah, we're just sort of muddling along as best as we can and trying to do our best to maintain some sense of sacred space when we come together on Zoom. Kazen is actually traditionally a very strongly monastic tradition. So, you know, there's the temples, there's all the rituals, the clothing, the food, it's all quite organized. So we've sort of had to translate into householder Zen. So usually when it's not a pandemic, when we have our retreats, our session, we do try and follow some of those more monastic traditions in how we eat and how we, you know, dress and silence and things like that. But now we're very much meeting as a householder Zen. So our online retreat will also, again, try and keep some of those elements, but within the context of being a householder. So it's definitely a strong, I guess, merging of that ordinary life and that sense of the sacred space that we're experiencing in the pandemic. So Thich Nhat Hanh has a really beautiful way of putting this. And he, I recently turned 95. Had his birthday, I think, last week. And in his book, Silence, The Power of Quiet in a World Full of Noise, he says, "Wherever you are can be a sacred space if you're there in a relaxed and serene way, following your breathing and keeping your concentration on whatever you're doing." And recently I heard a really nice story about Thich Nhat Hanh. So I did an online retreat, and one of the teachers was Subhana Basagi, who is a teacher with Sydney Zen Group, and this is also one of the teachers of Melbourne Zen Group. And she described how many decades ago she was living in an intentional community, and Thich Nhat Hanh was visiting that community and staying with them. So she hosted him for dinner, which would have been quite an amazing experience. So she hosted him for dinner, and then after dinner she got up to do the dishes. And then Thich Nhat Hanh got up and said, "No, I will do the dishes." And she was like, "No, you can't do that. That's just, you know, impossible. You're my guest, you know, please sit down." And then one of the nuns who was sort of traveling with him said, no, he really does want to do the dishes." So she said, "Oh, okay." So she describes how Thich Nhat Hanh got up, and there was, you know, quite a pile of plates there, no dishwasher or anything. So he got up and he just started washing the dishes one by one. And she said she's never seen anyone before or since wash dishes with such careful attention. It was like as if every plate was like a baby Buddha that had to be bathed. She said it was quite extraordinary, that sense of watching him doing the dishes. So Thich Nhat Hanh also talks about, in our ordinary space, our home, having what he calls a breathing room, which is kind of like a meditation room. So he says, you know, if you can, you have your bathroom and your kitchen and your lounge room. But you could also have a breathing room, which is a dedicated space that is set aside. So for most of us, we don't have enough room for a separate meditation room. But if we don't have that, we can have a little corner that is dedicated to our meditation practice. And ever since I moved into my first shared house, probably 19 or something, I've had something like that. So it used to be just upside down cardboard box with a little cloth and a small wooden Buddha and some incense and a candle. And then my cat kept on climbing on the box and sort of damaging it. So eventually I upgraded to a bit more of a solid box. But basically it doesn't matter where I've lived, it's always been, there's been a little, I guess you could call it an altar, a little place in the corner of the room, with a few things on it and a nice cloth, and then, you know, take up my cushion to do the meditation. And then again, a lot of countries, they have, you know, they might have a cross, or they might have a little temple in a lot of Buddhist countries. So there's a sense of having a dedicated space in your house for that sacred space, which is sort of that space away from just being concerned with ordinary, you know, day-to-day concerns all the time. So there's a joke that two men are smoking, they're two church-going men, and as they're smoking, they sort of say to each other, "I wonder if you can actually smoke while you pray. You know, we're meant to pray, but it's, you know, we also like having our smokes. So I wonder Maybe we'll ask the priest whether we can do both at the same time. So one of them goes to the priest and says, "Oh, we've been thinking and we're wondering, would it be okay when we're praying if we smoke at the same time?" And the priest says, "No, that's just terrible. That would be sacrilegious. His praying has to be done very seriously, and you definitely can't smoke at the same time." So he goes back to his friend and thought, "Oh, yeah, no can do. As we thought, yeah, it's definitely not allowed." So the other man says, "Oh, no, you asked it completely wrong. I'll try." So he goes to the priest and says, "We were wondering, when we're having a smoke, would it be okay if we also prayed?" And the priest said, "Yeah, that would be great, so throughout your day when you're doing the dishes or walking along, and yeah, you say a little prayer, that would be perfect. That's a really wonderful idea." So so again, it's that sort of sense of, what is ordinary and what is the sacred. So Susan Cain, she's written a book called Quiet, something like Quiet, the Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. And what she talks about is that sense of having sanctuaries of silence. So having your ordinary day, but then having moments where you just have, sort of a sanctuary of silence, time away. And she says, particularly for introverts, that can be very nourishing. So introverts can be out and about and be quite busy, but then there's a sense of being a bit exhausted from too much contact, and then you sort of need that sort of silent space. So that's another way of thinking about integrating that idea of a sacred space, a bit of a sanctuary space into ordinary lives. And so when we have traditions from another culture, sometimes there can be some discomfort around how that space is created. So we are following a Japanese tradition, and Japanese tradition is quite different to the Australian culture. And so sometimes there can be that sense of, this is coming from another culture. I'm not really that comfortable with those practices. And that's fair enough. We don't always have to feel comfortable with everything. But there's also a lot of wisdom in sort of setting time and place aside for these practices that we can do together. Getting used to maybe this is how they do it in another culture, and we can maybe adapt it, but also find our own way within those practices and just say, yeah, this is the way we create that sacred space for ourselves, for our group. It's a valuable place to have, it's valuable time to have. And this is just the way we do it as a group and support each other in our practice. So, thank you.